it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's get to talking about some Texans football. We've taken too long. I don't want to talk about no Aggies right now. I want to talk about no Astros right now, even though Astros do have a big game tonight. The biggest game in the city of Houston is this one. Texans.
You're darn right.
Bucks. Yeah. Monday Night Football, 6 p.m. You'll have pregame right here on Sports Radio 610 at 3. You'll have a pregame at 2 with the fellas of The Drive on a truncated show. All of that we've got. But what are the big questions that you're looking at? Because I found myself this morning, John Lopez, when I woke up, not getting up and brush my teeth, not going and doing my daily movements, right? Sorry, I shouldn't say that at noontime. You're eating lunch and everything. That was just nice. My brain was like, this is a nice way of
saying the movements he's making.
I hope he's talking about jogging.
Let me get that shake weight going.
I wasn't. That was the nicest way I could put it. Yeah. But like, the first thing I thought about was I started asking myself questions about this game. And so 713-572-4610, if you want to add in to these questions, and obviously the Mo Karam Injury Lawyers live streams are both available for you there. But I kind of want to just run through these in, to be honest, a kind of free-form way and see if we get to some of these. One of the first ones that came to mind was, of course, the one that that our guy, B. Scott, brought to the table on Friday, which is, will the Texans run outside? Like, are they going to truly exhibit themselves, or display themselves, rather, as the game plan offense that they purported themselves to be? Because part of the game plan would have to be, if you're looking at where do we attack this Buccaneers defense, especially if you're going to be a run forward, it's not running at Vita Veyer. It's not running at the big boy in the middle. It's running towards the outside where teams have had more success last year and seemingly early on the Falcons did last week as well. More to the outside and less to the interior, which is diametrically opposite to what the Texans seem to want to do, running between the tackles downhill. I wonder, will they shift that, or will they try and kind of, and this maybe isn't fair, but run themselves into a brick wall consistently?
Well, that's a great question, and I think the answer, I think they're gonna try some, you know, outside the tackles is what you're talking about, but I don't think so. And part of it is not just, oh, you're not really a game plan offense. The weakness might be on the outside. No, I think the way they're built and more runs for Nick Chubb, that's an inside guy. That's a between the tackles running back. So I think if Nick Chubb gets more carries, you're going to see more carries between the tackles. I don't think they're going to go outside as much running the ball.
But Nick Chubb does have, which is funny, because, of course, we would attribute this to Joe Mixon, who, hey, buddy, hope you're doing well. That's what D'Amico basically said.
Yeah.
He actually tracks more as the guy probably in this running back room that has the most vision, that knows how to read blocks. He did do that well week one, reading the blocks. I do think you can trust him to get to the outside. Now, the explosion isn't there.
Outside or call the play, you know, on a stretch type play. I think get to the outside is a different thing.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. And also, sometimes if you're trying to block it up the middle and everybody's there, maybe that's more opportunity to bounce than if you actually try and run off tackle, which they did a little bit from time to time. But I'm interested to see what the running attack just looks like in general, because obviously I could talk about where they run the football, but the question also pops up, who they run with the football.
Yeah, no, and I think that's why I would lean toward, if they change anything up, and I know we're going to get to some other questions here that are going to address this, but if they change anything up, I don't think it's going to necessarily be the run game strategy.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of the questions that I have, and again, feel free to throw any in here. This is real freeform off my brain. Will the Texans trust the youth? Is week two when they do it? Because week one was very clearly, we are trusting the experience that we have here, both out the gate and then even more so as time went. Mm-hmm. Justin Watson ended up with a lot of routes. And I don't think that I don't think they were wrong for doing that, because you saw him run clinical routes that ended up, you know, getting a few holding calls and penalties in the secondary. So it's not like utilizing him more was a problem. However, the upside players are Jalen Knoll, right? The upside players are maybe some Woody Marks in here. And so will they utilize some more in a home opportunity where maybe this is a little bit more of a controlled environment, more of your youth, in order to see maybe the possibility of some explosive plays and an opportunity to really get at the middle of the field possibly?
And that's where I will say yes. I think this is something that almost out of necessity when you think about it. First of all, Christian Kirk, who you were figuring to rely on heavily, is out again.
And as well as Braxton Berrios.
As well as Braxton Berrios. So if Christian Kirk presumably gets back next week, you know, he's going to be a big part of the offense. So if not now, when? If not now, you
week
know,
six.
Trusting Jaden Higgins and or Jalen Noel or whatever to get a little bit of the attention and more touches for Nico Collins, then when are you going to do it? I think that is – I have a hunch the Texans are going to add a little bit more downfield in this game.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel it. Simply because of how bad they were otherwise and trying to get in the end zone and Nico Collins' lack of touches. So I do think, yes, that's something we will see.
That's actually one of those that I had on here. How and how much will Nico be involved? How much is clearly – I think if you simplify the answer to more, I think that is correct. Nick Caley mentioned that in his availability. We've heard it from various different – I think CJ mentioned it. Don't worry about it. He will get involved, as if to say, hey, like, don't even waste your breath. Yeah. We know it'll happen. I'm interested in how, because he could easily be an outside guy and just kind of allow him to continue to be that big X that we know he's capable of being. Are they going to move him around?
I think so.
Because I know that the Bucs are more static in the way. I mean, we've seen the Texans be this more in the past. More recently, I think like midway or maybe even a little earlier through last year, we saw them trustingly enough in the Kamari Lassiter to kind of feel like they could play man and stick Stingley on the best receiver and move around.
Yeah.
I don't know that the Bucs are wanting to do that. So will you have some instances where you'll see Nico Collins move around a good amount and maybe get some slot opportunities to possibly break him open in a similar way that we saw Davante Adams get moved around?
I wouldn't be surprised if the first play of the game is some sort of shot or at least target of Nico Collins. And then what you just said I think is the most important thing. This is a team – it's not like they're running the wishbone here. You know, they do have a lot of emotion. They do have a lot of trying to get the matchups, the game plan offense, and that's where it's going to come in, getting Nico either inside, on the move, you know, dragging as an area is cleared, one of those things. Absolutely, I expect that as well.
Some other questions that at least I have. Again, 713-572-4610, where a question said, does Joe Mixon have gangrene? I don't
gangrene.
Know. But I like you just kind of venturing a guess as to what might be happening in that space. Again, we won't know until they let us know when it's time to let us know.
He might got the cooties. Oh, we know.
Ooh, you know, I've heard the cooties are really bad this year. You got to really work on your cootie shot. They've gotten the upgraded edition of it, so really check in with your niece or your niece will probably be the one who knows what's happening with the cootie shots. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that it's all nieces in Houston that were the ones that the CDC trusted with the cootie shot information. Will they corral Baker? Baker Mayfield is a man that has some mobility to him. And I'm interested to see, because we know that the pressure will be there. The Atlanta Falcons, mind you, on Sunday, it looks like they actually have some pass rush for the first time in a number of years. And they were able to give Baker a little bit of hell, but not as much. And so I wonder, will, in addition to adding pressure that we know, 51 and 55, that's Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter, will apply to the quarterback? Will they also be good at keeping him in the pocket or at least keeping him from scrambling, utilizing one of his better features, which is kind of creating the chaos with his legs?
Yeah, and that's that's one that's going to be a little bit of a gray area. Yes, they're going to bring pressure and pressure Baker Mayfield. They just do because they're really good at it. But how much and how effective is he going to be? Because one thing he did really well in week one was get rid of the ball very quickly. And you know that they're going to be doing much the same thing. So is that 5 pressures and 2 sacks? I'll take that. Or is it, you know, no sacks but a lot of pressures because he's getting rid of the ball? You know what I mean?
Which of those would you prefer, actually?
I want the sacks. I want the negative plays or more than 2 sacks, to be honest. But I know they're going to bring the pressure and they're going to get to Baker Mayfield's vicinity, but he is so good at either maneuvering or getting rid
escaping,
of it quickly.
Yeah.
And to that end, actually, interestingly enough, this question popped up as I was looking at some statistics. You know me. The Bucs made a lot of hay against Atlanta in week one on deep shots. Mm-hmm. They were probably in the 20s when it comes to short passing. They were in the, you know, 20s, high 20s when it came to intermediate passing. They were top 5 memory serves week one in deep shots. Is that a pro or con versus Houston?
Oh, that's a con for sure. Maybe not in the corners. Maybe not with the help from the safety, but you know the way they have a smart offense that they run. Baker Mayfield runs it very well, gets rid of the ball very quickly. No, that is absolutely going to be one of the big tests that the Bucks offer is how they match up. We saw what happened.
Let's try to find Jalen Petrie.
Jalen Petrie and the safeties. That's exactly Ibuka, what I was going to say.
But that's going to be more intermediate. Like, I feel like when you talk about deep passing.
Yeah, but it turns into 25 yards.
Yeah, and they got a lot of receivers, too, where it's only two Kamaris and Stingleys.
They're looking for yards after catch against Petrie, against the safeties in the middle, whatever it may be, maybe even some tight ends. Etc. That's where it gets interesting.
So from my thought, the deep passing element is twofold. Really, it's one of those things that kind of tags back to last year with this Texans team when it came to the big play opportunities that seemingly happened. It was one of the few flaws that you looked at with what is a really, really good D'Amico Ryans led, Matt Burke led defense. Mm-hmm. And this is a team that maybe could take advantage of that. However, are they going to be able to do that if Daniil and Will are able to get home in a way that maybe it was harder for them to do because Matt Stafford was really, really good at being on his P's and Q's, getting the ball out. He was very, very good at staying on track. I don't know if Baker's going to be exactly to that same level of meticulous quarterback. And so are you able to get pressure that makes it harder for them to get the ball out? And then you end up with Ball Hawk, Kalen Bullock, Ball Hawk, Stingley, Ball Hawk, Kamari Lassiter, and then you end up in a place where maybe you get more turnovers.
Yeah, and you touched on something that I think is very important. I mean, this Falcons defense looks pretty good.
Yes.
Especially if you base it on last night. By the way, their run game looks pretty good, too, and the Bucs go to the other side of the ball. The Bucs shut Bijan down a little bit last week. So, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're kind of looking at this game from a different perspective. But back to my first point, like this defense, you know, can look pretty good, and they didn't get to Tampa nearly as much as they did last night with J.J. McCarthy.
No.
So there's that.
Although J.J. McCarthy, he looked a little frazzled himself.
Yeah.
That was a weird quarterback game. We don't need to talk about that this moment, but Penix, J.J. McCarthy, all I was thinking was, why did the NBC execs do this? Because this was all, you know how sometimes you put up a quarterback matchup and you're like, all right, we're going to see this one, and then it doesn't turn out how you want it. You go, damn, we wish we hadn't put that. That's exactly what I expected that to look like. You could have called that.
It lived up to that hype.
Yeah, they did.
You could have called that coming in. All right, another question that I have for the Texans here as they head into this big-time Week 2 matchup versus the Bucs. Is Ed Ingram worth all the uproar?
Ooh.
Because we were having a lot of conversation about the shuffle, and I understand that's not inherently about Ed Ingram himself. It's more about having guys in the roles that they had been doing most headed in. Mm-hmm. However, there is a nugget of that, which is about Ed Ingram playing right guard, and he is healthy enough to do that. I think that is what you should expect. You should expect the offensive line, rather, that was expected before we found out the abdomen injury would keep Ed Ingram out. Is he worth it? Because he was on a Viking. He was not good on the Vikings last year at playing guard, and we're hoping that he's come in and with, you know, the better blocking and technique and, you know, his, you know, system, he will be better. However, what happens if he's not?
Oh, I think it's on the table because we don't know. This offensive line was not good last week. We know that. They gave up so much pressure and didn't really get the push you wanted, et cetera. The only hope you have right now is even if Ed Ingram is just solid, at least you have Tytus Howard and Tay Ursary back at the tackle position. So that's where you're going to – and I mentioned this earlier. This is the first time we're going to see this line in a real game. So we don't know anything about it, and especially against a pretty dang good defense, it's going to make it – very interesting. We're not going to be necessarily sitting here, you know, tomorrow saying, "Oh, Ed Ingram, he didn't look good." I think it's going to have to do how he's affecting.
I sure hope not.
How he's affecting the entire line.
I sure hope he's not. We're not saying that because I don't think that's out of the question by any means that we end up in that place. I do hear you though.
Having Tay affects the whole line. Yeah,
having Tay set where he needs to be, hopefully with a little bit more confidence and a little bit more consistency than he showed in week one. Because there was some flubs where, you know, we talk about the offensive line being five fingers in a glove or, you know, a weakest link proposition. Yeah. And there were some times last week where, true to being a rookie, Arriante Ursary was the weak link that allowed something to stop. I think of the 0-yard run from Woody Marks, where there's Jared Verse in the back, in the backfield, and it's because Tay slips on a block that he's supposed to get out there on the right side. If he finds a little bit more of that consistently, it looks good. Plus, going up against these outside linebackers of the Atlanta Falcons, they're good. However, I do think that you can actually, you have the strength and you have the size to maybe be able to muscle them on the outside, so hopefully that happens. How about this as a question? What does tight end usage look like?
Ooh, $1 million.
No Cade Stover, and Cade Stover was a lot of lead blocking, I guess, for lack of a better term, on some of these inside zone plays that the Texans were running out here. You have Harrison Bryant, who is now on the 53-man roster, but he profiles more as a patch catcher. What does it look like? Do we see the same as usual with just, you know, the same guys, or rather with Bryant stepping in for some of the Cade Stover? Mm-hmm. Do we see more Jakob Johnson or British Brooks usage, depending on which of those guys get, whether it's Brooks being a healthy scratch again and Jakob Johnson being called up, or do they go with the Brooks normally? Is there even more 11 personnel where you really do have three wide receivers? What does the tight end usage kind of look like?
Yeah, I think that's the million-dollar question, and I don't expect tight end usage to be certainly not as significant, even though they love tight ends, as last week, where you know you had Dalton Schultz getting targets and blocks, and same thing with Cade Stover, simply because I don't know how much they trust that versus how much they trust maybe the receivers and having three wide receivers and such. It's going to be really interesting, you know, to see what Bryant can do and how they use them. But it is one of the definite things to keep an eye on is how they break down these tight ends.
This is an interesting question from the 972. They actually just have these requests for the offense. Spread mm-hmm. the field and get easy underneath throws, which I think should be there, including screens. And maybe that's how you get number 14 involved, Jalen Knoll. Mm-hmm. Maybe a screen and let him see use that speed with the big body, see if that helps in the same way that we saw in the preseason. But then also they said, add some read option to make them respect CJ's run ability.
Yeah.
Do you want to do intentional run quarterback run? Because he did a great job of scrambling, mm-hmm. but that's asking for another level of this.
I part of the reason my hesitance, I don't see them doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I don't mind the idea, but I just don't see them doing that. I think they're going to, in the run game and with C.J. Stroud, I think they're going to stay true to themselves. But as I mentioned earlier, I think they are going to add a few wrinkles in the passing game. That's where it's going to be, and that's why I hesitated on the tight end, too. I think it's going to be very wide receiver focused.
All right, my final question here that I'm kind of thinking about as we're heading towards Texans-Bucks tonight. Does the opposing quarterback NRG effect remain in 2025? It's one of those things that it started as a, this is odd mm-hmm. that this is happening with some quarterbacks, and then we looked at it all the way across the season, and there was clearly something there mm-hmm. where you have Josh Allen come in and not look like himself. You have Jared Goff come in and throw five interceptions at NRG Stadium. Does that remain? Because there's a few factors to that. There's obviously this Texans defense and what it looks like in the secondary, which week one, mm-hmm. they kind of got abused by Matt Stafford in some ways. Obviously, you still had a good defense. I don't want to try and overstate that. But then also, are you going to be able to add pressure to Baker Mayfield? And what does it look like at kickoff? Like, are you able to get people in? And does the Liberty wide out in the start of the season? Do you have the same energy in that stadium that I think helped make it tough on opposing quarterbacks in that building?
Yeah, I do expect the defense to really step up and be the decide. We're going to be talking a lot about the offense tomorrow just because of what happened in week one. But I think the story in terms of, you know, how you win this game, if you win this game, is going to be the defense. They really, really feed off the home crowd, whether it's there or not in the early going.
Because I could easily see this going either way. I could see Baker Mayfield looking flustered under pressure, throwing up ill-advised footballs, as he is wont to do, mind you. He threw 16 interceptions last year.
Yeah, that's the thing with Baker, man. As good as he's been over the past couple years, when he's bad, he is bad.
It's like I heard Seth mentioning this, and he's absolutely right. I think this is a rite of passage to be a Bucs quarterback in the modern era, which is, Jameis Winston, you might be able to throw five or six touchdowns, but you could also very much well throw four or five interceptions, right?
Yeah.
Ryan Fitzpatrick. Yeah, the interceptions are possible, and I think that's also similar with Baker. But I also, and I hate to, you know, remind you of this, I could easily see this being like pseudo Will Levis, where it's just like, why is he getting that ball off, and why is he getting behind this defense?
How did that happen?
Or sometimes he could be at like 118 passing yards, and then just that final drive, he just make a big throw that win the
that's
game.
That's him, though.
That's him. Yeah, that's what you get from him.
Yeah.
So all of these questions and more are on the table for the Houston Texans, and I want to see how many of these they answer on that field, and that's the goal. That's the important part, and that's part of having the expectations of the team, the type of team that this team is now. So let's see it. 6 p.m. NRG Stadium, have your white on for the Liberty Whiteout and get out there early, be loud, because you can help, I guess, with that last one at the very least for your Houston Texans as they take on the Bucks. All right, you're in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get to our lunchtime confessions as we always do right here on Sports Radio 610.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I know both you guys and all our listeners will be very happy to learn that I learned something this weekend.
I'm proud of you.
I learned something, Figgy.
Which is funny because at your age, you don't. I don't think you have to. No, not that you know at all. But I feel like people get to a certain age. I don't know exactly what that age is, but they're like, you know what?
I don't care.
I've done all I want to. Yeah. This is where I stop. Deal with it.
All right, so this is to set up my actual confession, but I learned what a deep fake is. You know what a deep fake
good.
Is?
I didn't. I never heard that term, but I knew exactly what it was once y'all explained it to
me. We've seen those videos that are not real, but they look and sound real. Well, let me give you an example.
We played a goddamn mining school today. Do you f***ing understand me? These guys aren't going to the NFL. They're literally learning how to dig holes in the ground and pick up rocks for the rest of their lives. So you'd think Arch Manning, from the prestigious Manning quarterback dynasty, would be able to complete more than half his throws against such a low caliber opponent, but he couldn't. 11 for 25 with a pick. What a joke. Our fans booed him. And honestly, he deserved it. All Christ, right, so, it's weird.
So that was not actually Steve. Well, it sounded just like him, but that's not actually Steve Sarkisian. We've seen those videos that are fake. They're called deep fakes. I learned that this weekend.
I'm proud of you.
And you know,
I just say AI videos.
You know when I learned that? Because I thought this from Mike McDaniel was actually a deep fake. Oh no. It was real.
Where to win games, you have to win the game, not lose the game. Honestly, and that is how you lose the game. You're moving the ball down the field. You're first and 10, and then you find yourself at second and 20. You know, that was critical.
Brother.
He's right. That is also correct.
That was very uncomfortable, first of all.
That was very David Culley-ish.
Oh, my gosh. He is just completely lost.
He's trying to get fired at this point.
He
man.
Might be.
Yeah, I don't think he want to coach no more.
I thought that was a deep fake.
Yeah.
I love saying that now, by the way.
That's the only problem. I'm glad that you know more, especially it's going to protect you from getting got on the internet, which we're all susceptible to. But I do hate that you're probably going to be the person that learns a new vocabulary word 17
times
and then uses it in all contexts, even the ones where it does not apply.
Like low key? Like
no, I feel like
hey man, you know what? That brisket, deep fake.
Deep fake. I feel like that's something you got to use to people that are actively on social media too. Yeah. You can't use it in real life.
Yeah.
If you go around the office and you say that, people going to be like, huh?
What? What are you talking about? No, I totally agree. But I hand to God, I thought that was a made up video of Mike McDaniel. It was not. He actually did and said those
things. If I'm the owner or the whoever in charge of him, I would not fire him. I will make him play the whole damn season. You ain't getting paid and not coaching this team.
Yeah.
Nah, you're going to coach every single game.
That was bad. Bad, bad.
No, and it's not just him. Like, there's this weird kind of passive-aggressive accountability that's happening on their offensive side of the football because Tua Tagovailoa was also at his presser and seemingly kind of pointing a little bit at Tyreek Hill and kind of telling him to keep running of sorts, to have to adjust in the air when he throws the football up there, almost to say that. And then you looked at Anthony Weaver and the way that he handles it, and it feels a little bit more like a traditional kind of we all have something. It's just like that whole locker room and the whole way that the foundation of that Dolphins team seem to be operating. It all just feels off.
It's bad, bad, bad.
Go ahead.
I'll ask this before I give my confession. Does it feel like the Texans' next offensive coordinator might be getting being freed here in a second?
Wow, you're already firing Nick Caley?
Well, no, but also
he might be out there. just saying.
I don't think that's going to happen, man.
Because I'm like the question that I ultimately am getting to is after seeing all this from Mike McDaniel, Would you hire him as an offensive coordinator? Understanding that he's not the head coach, but he has these tendencies.
Oh, I would hire him as an offensive coordinator.
He's not running. See, that's the thing. The head coach runs the whole damn team, responsible for the whole team. If he's just in charge of the offense, I'm fine with that. But I just don't see Nick Caserio and them moving on from Nick Caley, this, unless it's just god-awful worse than last year.
And I don't think the Texans will, because he's so tightly. Who's the Miami offensive coordinator right now, or quarterbacks coach or whatever? Bobby Slowick.
Yeah.
He's a pass game assistant of some sort.
Yeah, but I'm saying they're bound at the hip. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they're just going to get rid of Nick Caley after 1 year like this.
Yeah. Well, unless that's a different topic.
It got to be god-awful.
I got to admit, I finally had something that I never thought could happen. And honestly, this feels like a Lopez confession, funny enough, as I was thinking about it. I didn't think I'd ever be upset to see Mariachi.
What? What happened?
I was upset to see Mariachi on Saturday night.
Oh, wow.
And the additional confession is, I think I'm finally going to have to accept that I'm getting older, because I'm just like, nah, man, I'm still young.
There's no such thing as bad mariachi, is there?
It is when they're extending the time before this fight starts.
Oh,
yeah.
Because there was a lot of mariachi. If you were on Netflix with me, let me know. 713-572-4610. Waiting for Crawford Canelo to start. Yeah. They didn't start until like midnight local time here. God. Which, I mean, I felt for the people on the West Coast, but I saw a number of tweets and posts on various.
Or you mean the people on the East Coast?
Or East Coast, rather. Thank you.
That's 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
East Coast is 1 o'clock.
I saw a number of people that were like, look, if we don't get going, I will be KO'd. Right? Like, we need to go. Out. And then we have Mariachi here, and I was like, this is all cool. I understand we are headed towards Mexican Independence Day, but let's get to the fighting now. I'm about to sleep.
Yeah, that's bad, man. And here I was. I thought it was going to be an afternoon fight.
Yeah, nah, it damn near could have been an afternoon fight the next day. Yeah, but I feel like the mariachi, man, I feel like that's kind of like the opener for a concert where the headliner is late and they got to go back out there again people just booing because
they don't want them.
It's not personal. Mm-hmm. It's like, where the hell is the main event at?
That's what we're here for.
I like mariachi. I'm excited for when the Houston Texans mariachi band gets out there tonight. It'll be a fun moment of back to the regular season football. But that I was legit. There was no good feelings.
I hear you on this.
There were zero good feelings last night. I was like, if y'all don't get off the stage.
I hear you on this one.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I got to confess, man, I think Nick Caserio don't know who I am, man.
What? Everybody knows you.
Yeah, he know me. I feel like he know me personally. It was a couple times he walked up to me, what's up, Fig? And just, you know, the strong handshake and all that stuff. I saw him at the U of H game.
Yeah, he was on the sideline,
wasn't he? Yeah, he was on the sideline, and I saw him chopping it up a little bit, trying to be incognito with that bright-ass H-Town blue pullover he had or whatever that was and some sunglasses. So I saw him over there. I'm like, you know what? Let me. I'm kind of close enough in the stands where I could walk down real quick. What's up, Nick? So that's exactly what I did. I went over there. What's up, Nick? He hit me with the peace sign and then looked the other way.
Okay, I'm going to defend you. I think he does know you. No, a lot of times when people yell from the stand, you don't know who it is.
Yeah, he got a good look at him.
Yeah, oh, he did?
So this is my two options. Either A, he probably didn't realize it was me.
Yeah.
He probably thought it was just somebody, hey, Nick, and he just peace signed and kept it moving.
Right, that's what I think, yeah.
Yeah, because I did have the hat on, so maybe he didn't see the hair color or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the other, I guess option two is maybe he was just so focused on scouting where he was just like, cool, I don't want to talk like that. I'm working.
Right, right.
So at that point, I had a decision if I should try to double back, because I was going to ask him his middle name.
That's what I was going
to
ask.
We're still looking for
it. Yeah, I was trying to get to the bottom of it. Like, yo, if he would have said, hey, what's up, Fit? I would have, what's your middle name? I wouldn't have said nothing else. Hey, what's your middle name? But he ain't give me a chance. He looked the other way he wasn't interested. So I'm like, damn. So I got to walk back to my seat looking awkward.
Well, we got
to
find this out now, too, because I feel like something, you're on the sidelines. Somebody says, hey, You just think it's like anyone.
Yeah.
I think that's what it
yeah,
was.
I think, yeah, I yeah. think he didn't realize it was me, so I had to text Sean.
Yeah.
And Sean was cracking up. He was like, I'm going to let him know it was you. But, yeah, I thought that was kind of hilarious. Like, mm-hmm. man, he just gave me the peace sign and kept moving.
Yes.
Like, damn.
You think he was scouting our guy Tanner Cozio?
I think there was a lot of talent on that field.
Somebody say he was scouting Connor Wegman.
I could believe it.
Just another.
They scout everybody.
Just another six-round pick.
Yeah, so who knows? So I had a very, it's a tenuous, it's a tough question to do. It's a tough thing to do. But I had a tenuous moment after the Aggies won that game on Saturday night because it was such a, you know, exciting, thrilling win. Obviously, great game, all that stuff. So my wife asked me, hey, are you going to text Sean? You know, meaning like just, you know, friendly way, not talking trash or anything. But, hey, are you, you know, good game, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I told her, I snapped at her right off the show. I said, no.
Snapped at her.
I said, no.
Snapped.
I said, no. And she said, no. I said, I am not that guy. And part of my confession is I think those people are the worst. When you text someone whose team that they, you know, really, really cheer for right after a game, that's one of those things. That's all I need to know about you. That's a bad, bad look. It's one thing. To the next day, hey, what a game, blah, 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 you know, whatever. But when people say, and I've got, trust me, I've gotten more than my share of those texts, you know, the Aggies lose a tough game, like, hey, man, you know, what's up? You holding up all right? Shut the hell up. Don't text me. Not right now. It's too recent. And I told her, I said, I ain't going to do it. You know, do you do that? Nobody does that. You should not do that.
It depends on the friend group because there are some that I will. But obviously, it's rarely too serious. I will point out, though, I am proud of you because I just thought about it, and you did not do that
mm-hmm.
when Manchester United embarrassed me. You did just go buy a whole shirt for the team, though.
I like the
shirt.
I like the shirt.
I don't know how much that balances us out, I'm going to be entirely honest.
Well, I like Grimsby.
I bet you do. Grimsby Town. Do you know? So where is Grimsby Town?
Yeah, it's up in the Grimsby County.
All right.
Yeah. Outside of London.
Is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything's outside of London.
He's like, the country's so small, it's all outside of London. Yeah. In fact, there's only city in the whole country of England is London.
Yeah.
There you go. Those are some lunchtime confessions here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. I love Mexicans. Why are y'all doing this to me? I was just mad that it was late. What, I can't be grumpy at 12 midnight?
By the way, I will say the Mariachi Pumas that performed at halftime.
Yes.
At the U of H game. Mm-hmm. Real good, man.
Fire.
They were solid, man. Mm-hmm. I was impressed. I actually looked up some YouTube videos from them.
All right, that's good.
They were good, man.
Yeah.
Very good. All right, excellent. All right, coming up next, let's get to our winners and losers of the weekend. Who won, who lost on the weekend in sports, and maybe otherwise. 713-572-4610. Let's discuss that next. All right, let's get to our winners and losers of the weekend here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Before we get that, a little bit of Texans news. The Texans are elevating Jakob Johnson, the fullback, from the practice squad for the second consecutive game. That's per Jonathan Alexander of the Houston Chronicle. And so, I mean, this is what they did last week. We kind of were wondering when Jakob didn't make the 53-man roster at cutdown, but then he made the practice squad, and I was like, oh, is this just going to be where mm-hmm. they elevate him until they can, and then they figure out what to do with the roster? And as of right now, that's what, through 2 weeks, it's tracking like. But I think so. It feels like you can expect some Jakob Johnson fullback as you saw in week one. The only thing, and I was just talking about this with you, Lopez, mm-hmm. off air, I do wonder, is that going to be more effective this week? Because I don't know. It didn't feel super effective last week.
I agree with
lead
you.
Blocking.
Yeah, I agree with you. He only has one more elevation, too, after this now.
Correct.
So it'll be very interesting and kind of a proving ground, so to speak, for him today because he's going to be used. There's no question about it.
No, without question. So maybe. Because one of the questions I had when it came to like tight end usage, I do wonder, do they even expand his usage to where now he is kind of lined up as that wing back mm-hmm. when they decide to go for like some of those inside zone type things where he comes across and kind of blocks down?
Yeah.
Is that going to be Jakob Johnson? Because it feels like he's the best situated to do that rather than Dalton Schultz, who's did that a little bit. Like he's done that somewhat in week one. I saw that from him. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't feel like he clatters in the same way that you get with Cade Stover and that Jakob Johnson might be able to do. So maybe he gets utilized like that, or maybe it's just straight fullbacks.
How does it affect Bryant? Very interesting stuff.
No, I'm very intrigued to see some of that. So maybe he is a winner here. But some other, let's get into some other winners and losers of the weekend. Yes, Ocho on the text line from the 713. You are right. And I will start here. How about Haynes Bleeping King?
Mm-hmm.
Georgia Tech quarterback, obviously the transfer who previously had played at Texas A&M. It's weird saying a transfer.
All the quarterbacks played at A&M.
Fair enough. I don't even need to mention that anymore. He was at Tech last year. And this is part of the course now.
Had a big upset last year, too.
Yes, did this last year as well. And they get a big win again this year, Georgia Tech does, this time against Clemson. Who I would honestly, I'd put them as losers on this as well. Like sometimes you don't inherently have to have a loser on the other side to say that one person was a winner. Haynes King was fantastic. He is just a gritty quarterback. And I know that all the cliches that come up with that exist, but it's just true for him.
It is.
You can't necessarily look at him and go, oh, he's just an incredible passer of the football. He's a solid
runner. He's good.
He's just gritting this thing out and playing real hard and ultimately helping the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets to get a huge upset victory over a Clemson team that, man, Cade Klubnik looks like he is overhyped. Mm-hmm. And this Clemson team, this is a game that you just can't lose.
Can't lose it. And Georgia Tech was by no means a surprise. It's not like, you know, you weren't really ready for what they were going to offer, because everybody knows, as you mentioned, what Haynes King is capable of done. They've gotten a lot better. They're ranked this week, Yeah. So there is that. And I'm glad you mentioned Clemson. Because I also was wondering how much Clemson fans are really starting to be frustrated with Dabo. You know, Mr. I don't like to use the portal and all this other stuff.
Well, he got three transfers this year. So
three.
Yeah, man. That's more than the zero. Exponentially more.
Some are getting 70. You know, most teams get 15 to 20. He got three. I'm thinking he's got to change. He's got to change the way. He's not keeping up with how you do football in this era.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't even know how much I put this game on the transfer portal, but one thing that was evident, Cade Klubnik did not look at the level that you would want, which obviously that ends up being a big issue. They're 1-2, mind you, those Clemson Tigers, compared to a 3-0 Georgia Tech team. And yes, I will not say Yellow Jackets because it sounds like Rob Torres was a loser. He said that he bumped into a hive while mowing the yard yesterday. Got stung 8 times.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's a big old. And hopefully it wasn't just bees. It's probably better if it's bees compared to
for sure.
Wasps, right? Because you don't know what that.
Or hornets.
That's the worst.
Is it? Yeah. I wouldn't know. I'll stay away from all of them.
I just talked to my sister-in-law up in Cleveland. She was hiking and heard a whole bunch of people screaming and yelling. Ran across a hornet's nest.
Oh, no.
Oh, shout out to our friends who love going out to all the various remotes, particularly when the drive is out remote. Shannon and Steve end up, they got their In the Loop mugs. Pine glasses.
Nice.
Shout out to everybody that turned out to BB's on Friday for Football Friday. Another Football Friday coming up this week, mind you, where the drive glasses will be on offer. Some other winners and losers. How about Deshaun Foster, loser, former head coach at UCLA? I say former because he was fired after just another terrible loss. The transfer quarterback that they brought in, I don't know how much it was him making that decision, but Nico Iamaleava hasn't looked good. And he got fired after an 0-3 start to the 2025 season. I mean, there's a lot of things I can say about Deshaun Foster, former used to play for the program. But I'd just like to take you back to his first Big Ten Big Ten Media Days press conference. This was all of the energy that he can muster to get people hyped for UCLA in the Big Ten.
I'm sure you guys don't know too much about UCLA, but our football program, but we're in LA. It's us and USC.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm just basically excited. Really.
That's right.
That's it.
That's right,
man.
You can hear
any
all the
questions.
Yeah, I got a question. Why are you still here already? Sometimes, and this is one of those, we should have known from day one. This ain't going to work out. Sometimes you know on day one.
And what's funny is I don't even know how much this is Deshaun Foster. I think that UCLA is just a place where you can't win.
But that doesn't help.
No, I mean,
they lost. By the way, you didn't mention this. They lost to New Mexico.
That's right.
They got run out the gym.
Correct.
By New Mexico.
That's right.
Yeah. You should know on day one with some David Culley. You know,
at that point, my question would have been, hey, did you know you was getting this job? did it catch you off guard?
It kind of did. Because remember, Chip Kelly leaves UCLA to become the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. Mm-hmm.
That's also a red flag right there.
Right. Because it's so hard to win at UCLA. Think about this. All right. So it's a program that's in the LA, you know, the UC system. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't get as much money as USC. Like, clearly they have high academic standards as well. And then something I don't think people think about enough is being in a big city like LA, you go, oh man, that's great for getting guys. One, none of your players are the big dog in the city, right? Like, there are so many other people mm-hmm. who outweigh them when it comes to celebrity and star. Not that necessarily that is the big sell. But then on top of that, your assistant coaches are dirt poor.
Yeah.
Like, we talk about the coaching pay. That's for the head coaches. Assistants don't get paid that much. And then you have to pay LA standard of living costs.
Yeah.
It's so hard to get good assistants there.
There are so many things that are working against UCLA.
And of course, that also works against USC, but then USC has a little bit more to give.
Yeah, but no, for sure. USC, you know, also a private school, so they can do a lot of things that UCLA cannot do. They certainly have the more pedigree lately. There are a lot of things working against UCLA. I don't think it's impossible to win there. It's harder.
It is.
And everybody's poaching all the California kids as well on the recruiting trail and NIL, et cetera. Nevertheless, sometimes you just know on day one.
That's right.
You just know.
How about a big winner on the weekend? And it might have just been Friday, but Friday was enough. How about Zach Cole?
Yeah.
Gentleman comes up and is able to really almost, is it wild to say single-handedly?
Well, he had, what, 3 hits and 4 RBI, something like that?
Oh, let me get you the exact line so I could be right about
home
this.
Run Zach Cole, on the first pitch.
3 hits in 4 at-bats, 4 RBI, as you mentioned, 2 runs, and a nice home run on his very first at-bat.
First major league pitch he saw.
That's right. After that game, he was slugging a 1.500.
Freaking Babe Ruth.
He was incredible. And can you give me a little audio here, Fig, as we go down to AA with the Corpus Christi Hooks and hear how the fellas on the farm took seeing their compadre, Zach Cole, ball out at the major league level. That's about 10 seconds before the volume creeps down.
Yeah.
Those dudes were hype. But
they've been on buses with him.
I'm not on no bus. I was hype. I was like, Zach Cole, who are you, dog? Can we just get more of this?
Yeah.
That's a good feel. That's always a good feeling. Seeing somebody you was working with, and then now they take off in a moment like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, yeah.
It was the best.
Yeah, I mean, he accounted for 4 out of the 11 runs that you scored against the Braves on Friday in that 11-3 victory. He was a godsend. I don't know that you're going to find any more of that pop, especially because you get the benefit of nobody mm-hmm. really knowing how to pitch to you. Maybe that helped him quite a bit, because I imagine you go yard on that first pitch. Some of that is we didn't know how to pitch to you.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, the other part, you know, as the Astros face these two huge series back to back, you kind of don't have much choice but to depend on some of these guys.
No, but so shout out to Zach Cole. I just wanted to give him his love because mm-hmm. that was an incredible outing. I mean, again, going 3-for-4 in 5 official at-bats, I thought that was incredible work mm-hmm. by the young man. Loser, Younghoe Koo, the kicker for the Atlanta Falcons. Because you saw the cat that they brought up off the street go perfect yesterday. Was it 4-for-4
mm-hmm.
in field goals? After Younghoe Koo, who was a healthy scratch last night, like, your job has got to be gone, right?
I think his job is gone. Did you see what's his name? Romo was the kicker. Introducing himself to teammates after the game.
That's right. Yeah.
After the game.
The only player that he knew, he's like, I know Bijan Robinson. I'm like, yeah.
I know that guy.
Well, I imagine people are going to be a lot more amenable to meeting him and knowing who he is after he kicks some field goals to help them win a football game. I'm sure that helps quite a bit. And how about this, a winner, and not really a good one when you look at it from an Astros perspective. The big dumper himself, Kyle Raleigh,
mm-hmm.
He had his 54th home run, which tied Mickey Mantle for the most by switch hitter in a singular season, and he still got games to go.
He still had big games, as we just mentioned.
Yeah, so you're not facing off against the easiest one, at least in Cal. and the rest of the Mariners once you get them end of the week. You got more important things to worry about if you're the Astros, though. Rangers in town for a 3-game set starting off tonight. The bigger game, though, in the city of Houston, I hate to do the Astros like that, but the fact of the matter is you got Texans, you got Tampa Bay Buccaneers at NRG starting at 6. That's going to have a lot of the city's attention. And so coming up next, Texas win because, Texas lose because. What are going to be the things, the factors, the matchups that determine whether the Texans are 1-1 or 0-2 come tonight? 713-572-4610. Let's break that down next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.